Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about the spirits of the Grand Midway Hotel with owner Blair Murphy. The hotel has a very interesting past because you mentioned the murder in 1949, the woman and the fireworks, and both those seem to have kind of been covered up. Like nobody really wants to talk about what happened. So do you think that's added, like with those two in particular, we'll start there with those two. Do you think that their spirits are still there or activity in those locations?
So with the woman from 1911 that got killed by fireworks, her name was Martha Sierwinski. And a lot of people in town mentioned to us some horrible death happened there that the whole community saw, but no one knew any details. They just kept hearing this rumor, and it was so tantalizing. It drove us nuts. And about a year into living here, two women from the Sierwinski family showed up, and they had this photo, and which I had found one of those, the same photo in the building. And they said, this is our great Aunt Martha, who was on a porch up on the third floor, and she died when some fireworks knocked her throat off. So suddenly now we had like the details, and I found the newspaper. So these stories, they're in old papers, but we didn't know it at the time. I didn't have a date or name or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I think
Martha's there. Absolutely. But then like the guy who got killed in 49, the unsolved murder, I don't think he's there. That we don't get any EVPs on it or anything like that. The bones in the wall in the monkey room, that I mentioned earlier, that's seems to be a dead end as well. I don't know who they are. No EVPs or any kind of energy off of it. And I even called the coroner's office, and they weren't even, they were like, yeah, we're not going to bother with that. And I thought, what? What are you talking about? But I'm kind of perceived a little bit like P.T. Barnum-ish. Like, I think they thought I was making it up. And so I can see, even though it's inappropriate, I mean, they should follow up on it, but I think because it's me making the call that they just blew it off. And so I don't think that's the bones in the wall. I don't think have any kind of energy to them. We think we have a man in the hall, like an old butler guy. There's no evidence at all of any kind of, I mean, there's no physical anything, but I believe he's around all the time. I think I feel him. I think everyone else feels him. The child in the basement, we think we have children ghosts in the building because I always hear about that, mostly from women. A lot of these stories I'm telling you are mostly from women picking up on it. But the child in the basement story is like an infant. It was like someone dropped a baby. And the child stories we hear of ghosts are more like 6-year-olds. And so it doesn't fully match up. That might be two different things going on there. It's a big swirl. Sometimes if you catch the night on a good night, it's like all kinds of influences happening.
Yeah.
Not to mention the items that people have given us from their other places. And so.
And I do want to talk about some of those if you have a couple that are particularly interesting. But I want to go back to the bones in the wall, the girl in the basement. That's no way to dispose of a body. There's no good reason you should have bones in your wall. That seems to me that there was a death that was being covered up.
The wall, or there were bone chips. It was like someone, and it wasn't a whole skeleton. It was like someone broke up a rib cage or a hand got chopped up. It was like that kind of thing. So they were just like little chips in the wall. But still, I mean,
there's
the cadaver dogs picked
them
up.
Yeah, that there's enough
still,
bone
like, why
there.
Is there a hand in the wall?
There should not be a hand in the wall. And if there was an accident, I can't imagine just like, oh, keep the hand in the wall. It's no bid. It's not going to hurt anything.
This is a great,
weird.
I mean, what a find. Just like it just, the building just kept on going, like keeps on delivering these gems. I'm happy with all of it. I'm completely fine with all of it.
And if there was a girl in the basement, buried in the basement, that's not how you would properly bury your child, you know?
Yeah.
There would be.
That's another thing.
That's
if you were that
like
wealthy that you could own a 3-story hotel, you would not. You'd buy a grave.
Because it makes it seem like a cover up. Like,
absolutely.
Whoops, didn't mean that to happen. And now we have to hide her body. Or maybe it was meant to happen.
Last year, had this EVP machine that instead of verbally saying stuff, it would type out, like it would spit out paragraphs that were typed. And in the middle of this one paragraph, there's this whole thing about a woman screaming about, he killed our child, it's in the basement. And it was wild. Like the whole thing, unless, you know, they could have set me up, they could have pre-typed it, but it was pretty wild. So Chip Coffee, the guy who did Psychic Kids, he came here one time and he was like, oh yeah, there's absolutely a child ghost here and child in the basement. And he got this kind of funny look and he was like, he hung out about another 20 minutes down in the basement and he came out and he said, this is my opinion as a psychic. He said, there's a second body in the basement that nobody knows about. That back in the day when this was a brothel, something went too far and a woman got killed and people freaked out and buried her in the basement. It's the dirt floor down there. I buried her in the basement, unrelated to the child, and nobody's alive to even know that she's down there. So I filed that away. That was a neat story. And then three guys were in our canopy room, the one that has the most evidence, which always feels like a young woman screaming, just get out of my room, just get out of my room. It's just this room. It seems like it doesn't want anyone in it. It always just feels like a woman saying, get out, get out, get out. And these guys were cheering around 1 a.m. I came down the hall. I said, what'd you get? And they said they got 3 quotes and they got a name. The next was, I was the woman strangled in this room. And the third line was, I'm the woman buried in the basement. And I'd never connected the basement to the canopy room. I don't even know if that's true, but it feels like the building is filling out its loose ends and kind of creating its own mythology at this point, that I'm not even doing it anymore. It's like, it's just assisting other investigators. And so either everybody's delusional or something pretty, pretty neat is sewing itself together here.
It's interesting to me because of the kind of secretive, like there are skeletons in the closet in your hotel, almost literally. But it's like their stories haven't been told because the woman with the fireworks, it's Martha, right? And it seems like I was reading a story about her. Even finding that out wasn't just super easy, like in horrific accident at the hotel, the Grand Midway Hotel, woman killed during fireworks display. Was it that kind of story that you found? You know, was her story really out there?
Well, it was actually that had some suppression in that the fire department hid the records. So this is in 1911, so that they wouldn't get sued. And so even the file on the whole situation was like not kept at the fire department. Someone I interviewed an old fire department guy from like the 40s who said that it was in someone's attic somewhere, like in town, but that it had been removed so that they wouldn't be sued back in 1911. And so that did have some suppression. And again, the town was run by one company. And so whatever happened to the citizens, they wanted to minimize any kind of paying off to them. So some of these stories have been suppressed, maybe all of them actually, right, on some level or another.
Because like the guy who was murdered there, even that story, it's not clear. They never did. It's unsolved. They don't know who murdered
unsolved
him or
state.
Why.
That's correct. Yeah.
And so his story hasn't been told. So I think there's some stories there. I don't know. I think if I was mysteriously murdered, I would want to come back because that would piss me off. And I would want people to know who did it. Like I would want my story out there. And I don't know that I could properly rest until it was. I'm not a vindictive person by any means, but dang it, you can't go murdering somebody. So it kind of makes me feel like maybe like you're the right person to go in there and bring in people who can investigate this so these stories can get out.
Families have contacted me of some of the victims in different ways. And one woman, a real old woman who wasn't so involved with the internet, wrote me one day and she was horrified that I had put photos of and told the world where her relative was buried, which I had not done. But she just assumed because I was living here that everything on the internet about the story must have come from me. People have been reaching out to me, and I'm hearing all kinds of reactions, some positive, some negative. The people who lost the guy in 1949, they call me about every half a year and say, I know you're doing a lot of investigations, you know, anything pop up and nothing. It's been a dead end. There were two men that killed him with 2x4s. And there was a room of people in the bar that saw this. but he was thrown out in the alley, and a cab happened to be shooting by, and the cab's what actually killed him by accident. But everyone in the room, no one talked. They were threatened that if anyone talks, you'll get the same. And these two guys walked out and were never seen again. And so people knew who they were too, obviously, because they were running a business in there of illegal operation.
How traumatizing to witness that.
Yeah.
That would be horrific. Yeah. I wouldn't talk. I can understand that. So the canopy room, that's where you feel like the most activity goes on?
Yes, when we moved in the building, there was one room that nobody wanted. Like, it just we hadn't heard any of these stories yet when we first moved in, and we just had this feeling of like, ugh, like we just left the room closed and nobody went in. And when guests would come, sometimes they poke their head in the room and go, oh, I don't like that room. And so there was just this feeling from day one of this one room nobody liked. And someone gave us a canopy bed with a canopy, and we stuck it in there, and that's where the name stuck. It just became called the canopy room. And then over time, when investigators started coming here, which we shot up a list pretty fast. Like, we invited Catherine Ramslin, who was an author and a criminologist, and she contacted some other people in the ghost world, contacted some TV people, and suddenly, like, John Zaffis was here from the Haunted Collector, and other people just hanging out for barbecues. And so that room became a focal point for anybody that went to the building. They always came to that building as the most evidence coming out of that room. And then when people, like, there's a doll in there that came from a family in Pittsburgh that was freaked out by it in their home, and was given to someone who then gave it to us. And so I don't know the history of this doll, but this doll, everyone focuses on thinking, they put cat balls on it. It's always showing movement. There's a mirror in the room that came from another source unrelated to our building, and people think that they see faces in it. And they give me photos sometimes, and it looks like faces are either in it or have been photoshopped at times into it. But it's been a pretty consistent thing, this mirror people mention. And then there's a nun statue that I bought from a salvage place and just stuck in there because it made me think of The Exorcist. I didn't think the nun was related, you know, to The Exorcist or anything like that. But it turns up in people's dreams. And even my girlfriend one night had a dream where the nun was like patting her shoulder and talking to her. And it's just creepy enough. The nun was like, it's okay to live here, you know, and just kind of creepy, but not like evil. And so those are the three items in the room besides the room itself that every investigation seems to mention them.
And it seems like, do the teams get some pretty consistent?
Yeah, pretty consistent. I'm happy that people leave happy. Like, sometimes people get chased out of here. I would say about once a month, and back in August, it was like 3 weekends in a row where people, they don't even stay. They're like, we're getting the fuck out of here. And they leave. And it's funny, but they're also investigators. So they kind of came for, I mean, they wanted to be spooked, and they just got too spooked. But that's what they're coming for. And so everyone's happy in the long run. I'm happy that they're happy. And so that's been going on too.
Cause on your Facebook page, there's a couple different text conversations that you screenshotted and posted. And one of them is on there and it says, something jabbed me in the neck in the demon room. Felt like a needle went into my neck during Estes method. A lot of demonic talk and someone telling us to be quiet and leave so many times. Something didn't want us in there for sure. I see why someone would leave.
But they're also like, yay, like we got results. And so it's a funny combination of this crowd that comes here because they're not looking for a calm night. No one's coming here for a good night's sleep and a shower. They're only coming to make contact or provoke or have some kind of communication. And it's been nice that people get a lot of results. I mean, I can't make it work. I just fell into the situation, but it's been pretty consistent. And overall, people, like, if they're staying in the building, it's like 8 out of 10 people don't spend the night in the canopy room. They go in the morning. I find them across the hall and in the mermaid room or one of the other softer rooms. So there's been a lot of consistency.
Well,
I
think it's interesting because one of the replies on that post was someone said, can't wait for our investigation on May 25th. I read that and go, oh my God, I don't know if I'm brave enough to go in there. And the other people are like, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Like, They want that kind of interaction.
That's correct. Yeah.
What are some of the stories that have, or has anybody even shared something with you that really surprised you, a finding or something that happened to them while they were there?
Well, I try to record actually an archive, like every, I poke in a couple times through the night. And so I've been videotaping for years, different investigations going on. And so I've been building up a catalog to, I haven't really put out much video at all. And I'm working right now on this mini series of things to put, I'm chopping together like several investigations simultaneously going on in the same location. And so that'll be coming out before the year's over. There's been a couple times, like recently, when I bought several of the properties around the building and I started moving into other buildings as well, I feel like it changed a little bit of my relationship with the building. And like, I think the building was even mad about it at first, because I don't feel threatened in the building ever, but a couple of times lately I've been really spooked in there. Like I'm in there changing the sheets alone and I'm thinking, yeah, it's a pretty heavy feeling tonight. And so there was one team that came earlier this year where they freaked out and they left, and they were like, this, you know, we're supposed to do a documentary here and no one wants to be in the building. And I came in the morning and they were like, what the hell is going on in this place? And they told me a bunch of things that happened tonight. And they said some stuff that I thought, you couldn't know that. That's something, like they were talking about someone who lived in the building that's been gone for years. And I have personal relationships with people that have lived in the building, and some of the stuff is secret. And this person told me some stuff that I thought, you're right on, and there's no way you could know that. And that was kind of fascinating. There's a person that's missing that used to live here, and they were quoting that person, and it was fascinating. I didn't respond, but I internally I was thinking, oh man, you are so on the needle. That's wild.
Wow.
That you're like quoting them, and you wouldn't know what that reference means. And there's been a couple other psychics that have been here. That my friend Manuel, I've got this buddy who died from Manuel. He was this really vulgar Venezuelan poet that I knew from Los Angeles. And once in a while he pops up, like someone will be talking about things of coal miners, and they're like, there's some Spanish guy cursing like a sailor. And it comes out of like left field. And I think that's my buddy Manuel. He doesn't fit the context of anything in this community or what investigators are doing, but he turns up sometimes. And now that I'm saying it publicly, like, cat's out of the bag, but that's, that kind of stuff is fascinating to me, where I think you couldn't even, like, no one in, there's no context for you to even know that or be aware of what you're saying. And that always fascinates me when things like that pop up.
And have you thought, with your filmmaking background, have you thought about doing a documentary on the hotel?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I've been working on, collecting all the video. Yeah.
Gathering all that. 'Cause that could be really interesting.
So for example, we have a room called, people call it the demon room. I never called it that. The painter who lived there never called it that. But there's this kid moved in many years ago, and he was a good friend of mine. Like I liked living with him. He was very creative. And he painted all these big demonic murals, okay, on the side. And so he had this room, and the people started referring to it as the demon room because of the murals that were in there. And he's young and gravitated toward heavy metal imagery and stuff. And so I don't think he even was fully aware of what he was tapping into when he was doing some of this stuff. But he would say to me, I'm just painting what I see. I'm just painting what I see. And he had a big Abraxas and a big Baphomet. And he was very protective of these paintings. And people, John Zaffis tried to buy them. This celebrity DJ from LA tried to buy some of them, and he would not part with them at all. And the room got creepier and creepier, and the energy, I mean, in the room, and it felt to me like a beehive humming, and it rivaled our canopy room. Like teams that were coming there wanted to investigate that room too. And there's this guy, Brian Kano came, and he put a documentary on YouTube, and they climaxed the film in that room, and they were freaking out. I found them like 2 a.m. outside, all upset. One guy was crying, and that sort of kicked the canopy room into like the public eye, excuse me, the demon room into the public eye. And this kid, like some changes went on. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but he one day, like the paintings had to go. He took all them outside and burned them all in one big pile. And then he went away and no one's heard from him. It's been about 10 years. And tried to reach out to him, tried to find him, tried to track him down. Not like no presence on the internet. Family says, yeah, he's around, but he's not around. And so this summer, some people, a couple of different teams, different weekends, were mentioning him, like saying, yeah, this person has a message for you. And these different teams were saying the same message, which is kind of wild. And it was stuff that they couldn't have known. And like, I have footage of the person making the paintings. And so I'm seeing all these documentaries online where they're referring to him. And I'm thinking, I have all this source material. It's going to be great when I finally cut all this stuff together. And so that's what I've been working on, where I can show the paintings being made, burning, all that. And so all that's going to be coming out down the road.
Do you still do much filmmaking?
Yeah. I'm working right now. It's so outside the box for me. It's crazy, but I have to attribute it to living here. So I put on a play. I put on one day for the town, Midsummer Night's Dream. And we put it on the park. Actually, the town council voted on it, and someone voted no. Like it's not a good idea for you to put on Shakespeare in the Park for free for us.
Despite the fact that every city does that across the U.S.
They just were suspicious we were going to pull like some kind of stunt. So I put on this play and I filmed it. And my thinking is eventually the film's going to be important, not the play. So I'm cutting together this film. And then I thought, this is stupid. Like, this is like wedding footage. Like, there's a billion versions of A Midsummer Night's Dream out there. Why? What would make... like this, what makes this one any worth any of the others? And it's not even worth it. We made it on like a dime. And so I'm always talking to the building like it's the universe. And I was like, can you throw me a bone of some kind of something of distinction that will make this film compete with bigger budget, real Shakespeare films? But I had a dream where something said, go to this paragraph in the First Folio by Shakespeare. This is the Rosetta Stone for the whole book. This will... the following A, B, C, D. These are some things that are hidden. If you follow these things, it will unfold into all this other stuff. And I woke up and I was like, huh, what was that all about? And so the film kicked off into this like detective movie. And I started interviewing scholars and it's a whole different film and it's pretty wild. And I'm just about done. But it was all made out of like dreams and intuition and following threads of distant thoughts, and it's not an academic piece in any way, but I'm real proud of it. And it's like, not like I'm a monster, low budget monster guy, but this is, it's not monsters. It's Shakespeare and spirituality and all that. But that's coming out of this whole, whatever's going on here in this like vortex of stuff. That's the first breakout piece I believe will be, that's like a whole different kind of subject matter, but
yeah,
but it's unveiling stuff still. And so That's coming out of me down the road soon too, not that far away.
So when you do put that together, you come back on and we can talk about it.
Okay.
Because I would love that. That to me sounds so interesting.
And thank you.
One other thing that I did want to ask you about, I don't know that everything I read on the internet's true, so I always want to preface it with that. But you talked about buying some other buildings. They're in town, and there is a church down the street that you bought that houses, tell me if I'm wrong or right, the Anne Rice doll collection.
Yeah. So, again, all this wild stuff keeps falling into my lap almost effortlessly. So, one day, someone's like, hey, you want to buy my church? And
that does not happen every day.
So, they're getting too old to repair it, and it's this beautiful, giant Irish Catholic church from around 1910, and it was, they wanted 15 grand for it, and I said, okay, I'll work it out, I'll find a way. And so I bought this church, and then I was online and I saw, I love Anne Rice's works, and I knew the Rices a little bit back in the day. I saw that the Anne Rice Doll Museum closed down and they were looking for a new location to house this doll collection. I mean, it's hundreds of dolls that Anne Rice owned. And so I wrote them like just a one paragraph. I bought a church. I think it'd be a perfect place for blah, blah, blah. And I had a dream a night or two later where I was hanging out in Anne Rice's bedroom with all this like these items and stuff. And I woke up and thought, oh, that's strange. What's that about? And then I got a phone call right after that saying, hello, yeah, we like your letter. Come on down and get them. And so I drove down to New Orleans with this truck. I had no idea what I was picking up. And Sue Carrez, who was Anne Rice's assistant, was very kind, and she just had got a feeling. And so suddenly I'm pulling into town with all these dolls, hundreds of dolls, and it's a gorgeous collection. And so that I unfolded, and my daughter was like, are these for me? So then the church, with one of the buildings that I purchased, I fixed up, and I had the doll collection all throughout that. Right now, the doll collection is in the hotel, actually. For last winter, it was getting so cold, I moved them up the street. And so they're in the hotel at the moment instead of the church.
It would be a cool place to see them, though, in the church.
It was cool. Yeah, it was. And we had some big Halloween bashes. I had the whole place was in purple light, and you could walk around. There was downstairs caverns, and the whole basement you could go through. And so that was wild too. The community was just like, what the fuck?
And with hundreds of dolls, just moving them to the hotel wasn't exactly easy.
There's a lot of car rides.
Yeah. Sure. That's a lot. So do you think you'll put them back in the church at some point?
No, actually I just sold the church. So the hotel's in the center of town, and I bought all the buildings next to it. So now the middle block of town I own, and I bought the parking lot as well. And so, cause these things are they're cheap. They're dying. People are leaving town, so they're just liquidating these properties. So, the church and the storefront up the street, some of those other properties were just a little bit too, they were three blocks away. So now I've consolidated everything into this bullseye in the middle of town. If I could build a moat and have a drawbridge, I would just be that.
Just leave us alone. We have a moat. You don't need to bother with us anymore. So will the dolls stay then in the hotel, or do you think you'll move them to one of the other buildings that you have?
I don't know. Every year, different things present themselves and things change here. And so for now, that's what's going on. And I'm not sure. We'll see. We'll see. I want the Rice camp to be happy.
Exactly.
So I want to make sure they're championing these dolls. And part of the deal is I can't piecemeal them, sell them off. I have to find another museum if I was ever to decide to not show them to the public anymore. Some of these items that people have given me, there's not restrictions, but just parameters that they want. There was another gallery in New Orleans called the House of Death, the Westgate House of Death. It was all just necromantic artwork. And Lila Wendo, who ran it, she had this signature piece called The Gift, where this woman is opening her heart up. These are life-size statues, by the way. And the angel of death is reaching in and taking her heart out. And so just before Lila died, she donated that piece here. And so we've got this towering angel of death and a woman opening her heart up, and hearts coming out. And just before Lila gave it to me, she said, oh, by the way, the skeleton's hand is a real human hand. There's crazy stuff that's showing up in this little town.
If someone is interested in doing an investigation there, is that possible? Can they go through your website and set something up, or how would they get information?
I don't even advertise because I'm doing this as a hobby. Mm-hmm. So if people find this place, they have to want to be here, because it's a weird scene for sure. You're not coming here for comfort. You're coming here because it's insane. Just a lot of energy. So I put out a phone number on the webpage, and the rest of the whole webpage is just photos and stories. And it's not really trying to sell it so much as just archive stuff. And I say to people, text this number and I'll text you back, pick a date. And if the date's available right now, I'm only charging $450 for the whole building for 24 hours. And so we work out a date, and then the place is yours. And it's every weekend now, people have been making videos. Again, I haven't even seen them all. There's so many popping up. It's been only the last 2 years. We would get popular around Halloween, but now it's the second I open in March or make it available, we've been filling up, which is wild for not advertising. It's just hitting the map now in this last 2 years that an awful lot of, and they're wonderful people. Every weekend, I never know what's going to pop up. So some weekends they're horrified demonologists, and other weekends they're really spiritual people that don't even use any kind of equipment. They're just sitting there vibing out. And then the next weekend it's like kind of geeks with all kinds of equipment. And I never know what's going to walk through the door. And they've all been fascinating, and they've all been mostly, they've been very grateful and kind. And it's just been a lot of interesting additional energy coming into place. And so I'm good with that. And so far, everything's been pretty positive.
I don't know. I knew once I dug into this place, I'm like, I can't wait to talk to Blair about this place because there's just so many layers to it. It was just so interesting to me. So I'm really grateful you took the time to chat about this today. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's nice to have positive things being said about it.
You get enough of that from the locals. And that wraps up our conversation about the Grand Midway Hotel with owner Blair Murphy. If you'd like more information on the hotel, check out their website, grandmidwayhotel.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, you'll get the archive and advanced episodes without the commercials. Become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.